Blog Talk Radio.
Sound Health Options Show with Richard Talk To Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning. Great to hear your voice. Great to see all the people here. I just tried to call Dr. Daniels, so she should be calling you shortly.
Great.
Yeah, a little bit of a mix-up today, but we're figuring it out.
It's always an adventure. It's never boring, that's for sure.
Okay. There are some special announcements, but I want to talk a bit about our special guest. This is the Sound Health Options Show, and we're going to be doing What Your Doctor Knows But Won't Be Sharing With You. We'll be talking to Dr. Daniels, an MD, and she's from Harvard. She's a Harvard-trained physician, but she is a whistleblower about the medical community, and they aren't very happy with her about what she's sharing with the public about big pharma killing people and things that are making big pharma a lot of money but making us sick. So she's going to be coming in and talking about how we are being killed in more ways than one. We are not simultaneously broadcasting, but we will be on our Direction for Truth show on Tuesday. Yes, Richard has announcements, and he's reminding me of that. So we'll get to that in just a few minutes. There is one hellacious announcement that everybody needs to hear. I was going to do some on radiation, but okay, hold on, Richard.
Yes.
So for people who are wanting to join us, we are not doing the WebEx. So join us at 347-850-1407, and you can get an account at Blog Talk Radio and listen in and be here in the chat. We love the chat. We love our listeners. Being sponsored today by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health, we just did a phenomenal two-day course free to the public with software about anti-aging. And starting Monday, we've got an absolutely full class on anti-aging. But we'll be doing more two-day free classes in December, and this time about weight and metabolism. When better to do it than around the holidays when we're all a bit gluttonous? I think we're going to sponsor us the radiation software today, because some of what Dr. Daniels is going to talk about is how we are being poisoned with food and radiation. So any of you who would like a copy of the radiation software, it is on our site, soundhealthoptions.com, and you can download it and get a copy of that. And there's several copies of how to use the software. Radiation is not on our portal, but you can go to Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O, and look up Sherry Edwards and then radiation. And there's several, probably 200 or so demonstrations, instructional demos on how to use this software. And there's lots of charts to show you what to do nutritionally about being radiation poisoned. We may get back into that a bit, because they're not telling us the truth about this, and it's coming out that they're not And Richard, do you have an announcement? I have two more.
Well, let me, I'll toss this one in, that for people who, since I know we switched over on Sundays to doing mostly blog talk radio only, because we'd like to build that audience, and plus that way it's just easier because it is an audio show. So you can find the playback on this show at soundhealthoptions.com. Click on the radio tab, and then under that, click under the Blog Talk Radio, and down there at the bottom is a player that has the last five shows that Sherry and I have done at the bottom, and you can click on that if you want to share it. If you want to just listen to it, you can listen to it there. If you want to click on it, then it'll take you to the page, to the Blog Talk Radio page, which will show you all the notes and all the connections and links, like we have set up with Dr. Daniel's page today. And I really do recommend that people sign up for a free Blog Talk Radio account. They don't spam you. They don't sell it. Well, I can't say they don't sell it, but to my knowledge, I've never had any issues with Blog Talk Radio logins or anything. And that way you can join the chat. We have quite an active chat happening over at Blog Talk Radio. And you can also listen online. There's some other benefits. And get notifications for this show when it's going to happen. So I really recommend that. Okay, go ahead, Sherry.
Okay, one quick one. New study links multiple infant vaccines to increased death rates. The vaccines in question are DPT, MV, and YF vaccines. The DPT vaccine refers to a combination of vaccines against three diseases, diphtheria, pertussis, whooping cough, and tetanus. MV refers to the measles vaccine and YF to the yellow fever. And this article goes on, just look for this caption. New study links multiple infant vaccines to increased death rates. And they're coming up and calling it SIDS, infant death syndrome. But the one that just chilled me to the bone came from Dr. McCullough's newsletter this week. And I'm just going to read it in its three paragraphs, because it is unleashing something horrible. On August, this is direct from his newsletter, on August 15, 2016, a few months ago, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, published a notice of proposed rulemaking in the Federal Register to amend the Public Health Service Act, which governs public health law. We warned you about this several months ago in this newsletter. What the CDC wants to do is expand the use of police power to detain and involuntarily quarantine you if you are traveling by airplane into the United States. And it doesn't say within the United States, that just says into. If you have a cough, a rash, a low-grade fever, or other minor symptoms of illness, they want to enlist airline personnel to report you to the CDC. Then, if public health officials think you might be infected with or could get infected with measles or any other communicable disease, they want the legal authority to apprehend you, detain you for 72 hours without access to an attorney or appeal, evaluate you medically, offer you a contract to sign that will allow them to treat you, such as to vaccinate you, as a condition of your being released, and then they can electronically monitor you after your release. This is all about a big measles scare that came up. 168 people, I think it was, had measles, and none of them died. It isn't anything life-threatening, yet putting somebody in quarantine and giving them a vaccine with no excuse whatsoever is life-threatening. And I think this is against our rights of freedom, freedom of health, freedom of pursuit of happiness. I am very much against this. The law has already been passed in California. You can go to the National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC.org. don't go to .com, it's some porno site, but National Vaccine Information Center .org, and look at what they're trying to do in each community to stop this law in your community. So I'm hoping Dr. Daniels will be able to add to this, because I don't know a lot about it. We certainly need to know more about it. Richard, do you have another announcement?
I had to mute myself for a moment there. Being living in California, when Brown did that, I was appalled, and it just, I'm certain Dr. Daniels will have more to say about that. My announcements are about one of my subjects that just, this blows, the combination of these two, I'm going to tie these two together. This has to do with Flint, Michigan. And it's almost a year now, I think. And it took a judge ruling recently saying that bottled water needs to be delivered to the people of Flint. A judge had to do this. Evidently, I don't know. There wasn't money to be made off of it. I'm just mind blown by that it took a judge ruling to say that water has to be given to the people in Flint, Michigan, because there's lead in their water, because the agents running the state at the time decided to save money and didn't test the water. I don't know how we got here, but all the bottom line is this article. I'll put both of these in the chat at Blog Talk Radio. This one is titled, "Bottled Water Must Be Delivered to Flint Residents in Lead Crisis, Judge Rules." Almost a year later, and now some action is sort of moderately being taken. You know, really?
The sick part of this is the people who were governing the city already had their bottled water sent in for all of them and the employees of the government of the city, but they still let the peasants, what they call the peasants, drink the water that they knew was unsafe. That's
yeah.
The sick part.
Yeah. That's the, you're right, you're absolutely right. That is the really sick part. The whole situation is sick, and yet that part really was, that one's horrifying to me, in that obviously the government agencies knew about it because they had bottled water brought into their offices. As this was, months before this was revealed, they were having bottled water brought in, and the citizens evidently didn't deserve such. I don't know. And then the secondary article to this is now, of course, over at Dave Adams,
Natural News.
Mike, thank you. He's talking about corruption, but it, really the bottom line is Nestle plans to profit off of the Flint victims with water privatization schemes, meaning that Nestle, one of the largest rebottles of water on at least on this continent, because they have all sorts of brands, is applying to suck even more water out of the aquifer from 150 gallons a minute, which is quite a bit of water. If you were standing in front of 150 gallons per minute, you could be knocked over. And they want to crank that up to have a permit for 400 gallons per minute so that they can bottle more water because – now, this is actually from Michigan they want to do this.
Oh, okay.
And so they want to, they're applying for a permit to increase their flow from 150 gallons a minute to 400 gallons per minute of water. And they're doing it under the guise of, like, look, the people at Flint need water. They're not giving them the water. They're selling them the water. There's nothing here other than a desire for a profit center. And the way the laws are written, I'll read this one short paragraph. Nestle, the world's biggest food company, will get to pump the additional water at no cost. Somebody noted, I'm not sure what that reference is, it just says M Live, noted that under Michigan law, any private property owner can withdraw from the aquifer under their property for nothing, with the exception of a $200 a year paperwork fee. The Interstate Great Lakes Compact does not prohibit water diversions outside the Great Lakes Basin. However, a bottling exemption within the law permits water to be collected and sold outside the region if it is shipped in containers below 5.7 gallons. So the whole thing is gamified so that Nestle, I don't know that they were the point of origin of getting those laws written, but it's gamified so that they can ship out as much water as they want as long as it's under 5.7 gallons in a container. All for a $200 a year permit.
Nestle has to pay the permit, or the local people have to pay the permit?
No, Nestle pays the $200 a year permit for the right to do that. But that's all they pay. They don't pay for any, not the volume of water they're not paying. They're paying nothing for the actual water. They're just paying $200 a year annual fee for the permit to do so. But they can draw out as much water as they want.
And they're turning around and selling it to the poisoned citizens of Flint, Michigan.
Yep.
That's disgusting.
Yep.
The government there ought to pay for the water.
Yep, 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 yep.
Oh, this is right in line with our guest.
Absolutely. There will be smoke coming out of her ears in moments. Dr. Jennifer Daniels is a graduate of Harvard University and the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. While practicing medicine, Dr. Daniels noted that, despite compliance on the part of the patients seemed to worsen under the care she had been trained to provide. She decided to give patients a choice between the standard of care, doing nothing, and natural therapies, diet, lifestyle, supplements, cleansing, exercise, herbs, etc. Dr. Daniels found that the death rate in her medical practice went from 4 a year to zero. The medical board began investigating Dr. Daniels for the offense of reducing a patient's blood sugar from 475 to 135 in 1 week with diet and exercise instead of using any pharmaceuticals. The patient was alive and well. Ultimately, the final charge was failure to cooperate as Dr. Daniels refused to reveal private records of patients that were unrelated to the complaint. Dr. Daniels now lives outside the United States and is dedicated to investigating and communicating to citizens and understanding the system called health care that harms so many. Her goal is to prevent as many reoccurring murders as possible through education. Dr. Daniel joins us to discuss the serious warnings being sent to and being ignored by doctors about the potential hazards of the antidepressants they prescribe. Good morning, Dr. Jennifer.
Good morning.
Well, water and drugs, big pharma, they seem to kind of be together right now. I never would put those two together, but they seem to be going in the same direction. It's amazing.
Actually, everything you've mentioned today is all part of one thing. And if we had to distill it down to something, just very focused, one point, it comes down to a violation of the Fourth Amendment. That is a violation of the right of people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable seizures and searches, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or thing to be seized. So this is important because what's going on here then is the people are being forced to accept vaccinations. That's an immediate violation of their person, very obvious and straightforward. Then you have people who are on airplanes being basically detained if they have a cough, which could be just from not enough water, or a slight fever. These are things which literally one-fourth of all Americans experience every year. And so to establish that as a criteria or threshold for seizing a person with, of course, all their belongings is nothing more than a pretense, again, to violate the Fourth Amendment. And so this is really all the government's trying to do is extend its powers to seize anyone at any time for any reason, and in my case, putting me on the terrorist list. So that gives the government the right to seize me at any time for any reason should I enter the United States. And so all we see here then is for the government is just an attempt to consolidate, solidify, and legitimize its desire to seize any person, seize any of their possessions at any time. And if we distill it down to that and that alone, and that's all we're talking about, then the people who are on airplanes and being examined and searched understand that it's the same thing as people who are being subjected to vaccinations, and it's the same thing as people who are being subjected to poisoned water and compelled to consume it.
And I just don't know where to go. It all blows my mind. How did we get here?
Compulsory education and subjecting our children to government schooling. That is it. These kids have been brainwashed from kindergarten upward, and now that we have government-certified daycare, the children are being brainwashed from the age of 8 weeks onward. And that is the essence of what's going on, is you have a human being that doesn't even know what freedom is, doesn't even understand. And I went to school at a time when the big message in school is the government cares about you, the government is making laws for your own good, and you should obey them. And even in my generation, I'm 59 years old, our parents sent us to school with the idea, don't get confused. Those folks at school don't care about you at all. And if Child Protective gets a hold of you, you will be raped, you will be violated. They are not your friends. And so we had this message from our parents before we even went to school. And so, of course, our question was, well, why are you sending us? They said, well, because the government's going to lock us up and send us to jail if you don't go to school. So all you need to do is show up, behave yourself, come home, don't worry about your grades. We don't care what your grades are. As long as you showed up, you know, and didn't create any ruckus and you come home, we're cool with that. So that was the teaching in the 50s and early 60s. Unfortunately, there was a civil rights movement, which gave people, black and white, the wrong impression that the government's in charge here. We're going to make sure blacks and whites get along. Don't have any relationships with someone of the other race unless the government, you know, says it's okay. And it was just, and so then blacks disregarded this message from their parents. In fact, the parents changed the message. Whoa, government's on our side now. Go to school. Leave everything they tell you. Study hard. You know, and just the message. And you know, my father said, if the stuff they were teaching you at school was really beneficial and important, they sure wouldn't be teaching it to you. So there was this skepticism before. And so now there's not this skepticism. And parents have turned their children over completely, 1,000%, to this propaganda machine. And the parents reinforce this. They drive the kids back and forth to school. They play taxi for the sporting events. They buy whatever the school tells them to go buy. Oh, buy this for your kid. Oh, buy that for your kid. I homeschooled just because I wasn't willing to go through the do this, do that Simon Says routine. But a lot of parents submit to this unknowingly, and they unknowingly are aiding and abetting the conditioning of their children to be robots. That's what's happening. Yeah. How this thing came along. It's like when I was at Harvard, and when I was at medical school, so I thought I was among these brilliant, intelligent people, you know, vibrant thinkers. And so I'm having a conversation with a classmate. I'm saying, well, you know, I see there's this rule, but this rule really is not beneficial to the people, to the patients, or not beneficial to whatever. And also, this rule is not fair. It's not egalitarian. And the response from the classmate would be, of course, but these rules are beneficial for us, and we need to obey them. We need law. We need order. We need to be law-abiding citizens, and that is the most important thing. It's for our own good. I'm like, aha, gotcha. But this is what is being raised. And so being a college graduate then means that you've had an extra 4 years of conditioning to totally destroy any sense of integrity or fairness. And so you then understand, these laws are made for my benefit, so it's going to benefit me over other people, so I need to obey all these laws no matter what. Even if a law appears to be detrimental to me, appears to be inconvenient, I need to obey it because the net effect is going to be a benefit to me. And this is the mentality that has allowed citizens of the United States to enthusiastically participate in their own demise. And this is why the middle class is becoming poorer and poorer and poorer. It is because of this. If I would say any one thing you could do, if you're a parent right now, take your kid out of school, whatever school it might be. I don't care if it's graduate school, bachelor's degree program, or grade school, or even infant daycare. Take your kid out of the program. Because that's what it is. It's a program. It's a programming of your child. And at the end of the process, or I should say at some point in the process, you will realize this human being hates you, doesn't like you, and that you have no relationship with them, whatever, even though you gave birth to them. And that's what the system is designed to do. And that is what is happening.
Well, and I have two thoughts. I have one, and we'll get back to this, but I have to introduce it before I forget it, is that I remember the first time I heard Bruce Lipton lecture talking about his education in the medical schools and how what he was talking about, potential of epigenetics and all of that back in his days in medical school, is that the term dogma is actually used in the medical realms in education, and dogma is a belief. It's a thing. If it's a dogmatic belief, then you are taught, and this is, I believe, carried over into regular education, standard education, you're taught to have a particular belief. And in Western medicine, he said there were dogmatic beliefs that they were taught. He was taught in medical school that didn't fit into what he was thinking about epigenetic potential. And so, therefore, he was kind of ostracized by some of his fellow doctors.
Exactly.
Because he was stepping outside of that dogmatic box, and they were like, no, you're not. You can't go outside the dogmatic box.
That's right.
It's dangerous out there. You might be thinking. We hate that.
Well, medical school, though, is the ultimate in mind control. So what you have then is you have your child being subjected to different levels of mind control at the preschool, grade school, junior high school, college, and professional school level. And in medical school, they actually literally inspect your thoughts, how you're feeling, and modify them for you. No, you shouldn't be thinking this. You should be thinking that. No, you shouldn't be feeling this. You should be feeling that.
And then I guess we'll dive into this sort of sideways. Do you feel with the up and coming new administration, do you see a change potential there for this?
Oh yeah, I'm very hopeful.
Okay. Why?
I'm very hopeful. Again, as a citizen, you have to put your priorities someplace. And the problem is people have no priorities anyplace, which means nothing, right?
Nothing.
So if your priority is on your personal freedom, then I think our present president-elect is going to be give us the biggest option there. One big crisis in America is autism. There's just no getting around it. And if all this president-elect does is make vaccines voluntary, that will release a whole generation from idiocy, servitude, mental retardation, and disability.
That's incredible. Do you see any change in the education?
No, it doesn't matter if you have jobs. If you're autistic, it doesn't matter. So, we need to put our emphasis where it belongs. That's one thing. The other thing is all these jobs that we've lost to China. I mean, no one's asking me about that, in my opinion, anyway. Oh, we don't want them back. We do not want these jobs back. Why don't we want these jobs?
We don't want these jobs back.
Because these jobs that are in China are the reason you can't breathe the air in China. All these factories are churning out all this pollution. Now there's this big fantasy that we can maybe do these factories under different circumstances, clean and brush the air, and have these insects. But whatever. But why bother? Who needs it? The real problem in the United States, the real poverty is coming from the Obamacare Act and the imposition of these involuntary health insurance fees for a service that is admittedly lethal. So that's one thing. The next thing is the middle class, their idea of putting their kid in a propaganda system from the age of 8 weeks to 26 years of age, then that's a real budget breaker there. Then the practice of eating processed foods and eating out at restaurants, if the average American home could just get rid of those three habits,
that would repatriate $30,000 to $50,000 a year per household. And that would be wealth creating right there. So the idea that the president can make you rich or get you a job or that you even need a job, you know, these are all questionable assumptions. We'll call it dogma.
Well, and the whole, you know, I'm going to step into this sort of like a conversation about, you know, Congress and the basic foundation. Part of the dogma is that we believe, you know, we've been educated, air quotes, that if we work hard and we go do our factory job every day, whether you're a physician or a person putting out a lug nut, it's a factory job of some kind. You go and, you know, do and rinse and repeat. So you have this belief system, and the idea is that we've been educated that if we do that, that we'll get the golden reward at the end. And some of that golden reward is beginning to crumble. We have corporations who aren't supporting us, who aren't advocating. You know, it used to be you'd get a job, and you'd have that job for life, and when you were done, you got a good retirement. So that's all beginning to fall apart. And I want to move us toward talking about healthcare. In that, it's hard for me to imagine how the system, because there are so many. Back to Congress for a second. So if there are 3 pharmaceutical lobbyists per congressman, how can a congressman actually have the capacity to make a clear decision, because he's being educated about drugs and why they're good and how they'll benefit his people? And I'm certain somewhere along the way he's probably making a nice little something on the side in some form or another. How is it possible for our government to even have a clear way of thinking about any of this?
Okay, I think that everything that you just mentioned is actually irrelevant. You know, as a human being, I was subjected to even more indoctrination than your congressman was. I went to actually 4 years of friggin' medical school, right?
Right.
And talk about incentives. They would feed my family every night at the best restaurants in Syracuse if I would just check a box and say yes. So if being bribed and being indoctrinated improperly was an excuse, let's call it, how could I possibly ever have woken up? I mean, we have to give people some credit for just plain old free will and common sense. That's number one. Number two, you're suggesting that these congressmen are being bribed. I would suggest to you that they're being threatened. For me as a doctor, it took more than all those bribes to keep me in line. It took the threat of losing my license. It took the threat of malpractice losses. It took a lot of threatening to keep me prescribing drugs for as long as I did prescribe drugs. And so I suggest to you that each one of those congressmen is also being subjected to threats. Another thing they're being subjected to is miseducation. They went through the same propaganda system, you know, K through age 26 or 25. They went to law school. So they're starting with a fundamental basis of miseducation, because the way to get to be a congressman or senator is to go through K through 12, bachelor's degree, and a law degree. Most of them are lawyers or some other advanced professional degree. So these are highly conditioned, brainwashed people just starting out at the outset. So you add the brainwashing, which is the miseducation, the foundation of that, with what we know to be threatening and intimidation, which must surely be going on. I mean, if you can openly intimidate and threaten a doctor with non-payment by insurance companies, loss of license, and malpractice suits if he doesn't adhere to the standard of care. In other words, if a doctor damages you and he followed the standard of care, you cannot collect. You have no financial, economic, or legal recourse. So that Auschwitz defense, I was just following orders, actually works in malpractice. That's exactly what that is. That's the I was following orders defense, which makes it, because of the way malpractice laws are written, it makes sure that every damaged citizen who's damaged by a doctor, doing what the doctor is told by the drug companies, of course, that damaged individual has no recourse and no compensation. So if the doctor is being threatened at this level, which is a high level of intimidation, you can bet your bippy that our lawmakers are operating under similar levels of threat.
I think lobbyists are a lost cause because they don't have many rules they have to go by. Just getting rid of them, I think, is a good thing.
I don't think so. I think lobbyists, leave the lobbyists there. Just leave them there. Don't even worry about them. What you can do, though, is you can make them ineffective. And the way you make them ineffective is you limit their ability to threaten the people they're visiting. Like when I was a practicing doctor, the drug reps, you can call them lobbyists, they would bring threats with them. Yeah, they didn't just bring gifts, they brought threats, too.
Well, the end of that question was, is there any intervention that we can do with either data or some kind of pushback? So as these doctors are being pushed to subscribe things that cause autism, like vaccines, and that's my opinion, and these medications that cause the suicides, and these people go up on these rampages, is there any way that we can intervene with these doctors? Do we have any hope?
None. All you can do is pretend you're taking the drugs when you're not. All you can do is get paperwork to show you're vaccinated when you haven't been banned.
Are doctors going to be jeopardizing their practices to go along with something like that?
Why do you think you need a doctor to accomplish?
Say it again. You faded out.
Why do you think you need a doctor to accomplish that?
Well, if I have a piece of paper that says I had a vaccine, somebody needs to sign it.
Not necessarily. I mean, we have computers. We have a Photoshop. We have all kinds of tools at your disposal. The first thing you've got to decide is that you're not going to vaccinate. That's the first decision. So the second decision then is how are you going to get paperwork that reflects vaccination? Because that's all you're being asked for. And all you need to do is go down the block, knock on the door, and say, can I see a copy of your immunization record? You take a look at the immunization record, take a picture with your cell phone, and you get to work from there.
Then how did the people, I think it was 2007, get away with in Maryland of marching children and their parents to a courthouse with long guns and the military?
Because the parents did not get the certification. The parents made a big, bold statement.
My kid's not vaccinated, and I'm not
vaccinated. That's the statement should have been, you know what? But vaccination is important, and I'm getting my kids vaccinated. Give us a couple of weeks, and we'll have this done. And they produce the paperwork.
Well, let's go a different direction, because
right.
I'm very reluctant to forge documents. But there's some people
Wait a minute. Which documents are we forging? And is forging this document a felony? And is this a legal document? The answer is no. An immunization record is not a legal document.
Well, if the school says a doctor must sign it and you make up some doctor, I have a bit of a problem with that.
Well, it's your problem. What is your problem, with autism or with documents?
Boy, that's a tough choice here.
Exactly. And the fact it's a tough choice is the problem. It shouldn't be a tough choice. It's a trivial choice.
Well, I want to move slightly sideways.
I mean, kids write their own laboratory pass all the time. Here, teacher, here's my laboratory pass. All right, I'm out of here. All right.
I want to go to a slightly different direction. There are a lot of famous people who died because they had barbiturates and they overdosed. Prince, Judy Garland, Anna Nicole Smith, Jimi Hendrix, Elvis Presley. I looked some of this up before we did the show. Had over 100,000 doses of sedatives by the time of death. So, are people demanding this and they're just complying? What's really going on with that?
You mean, are these people actually buying these drugs? Are they actually going to the doctor demanding prescriptions and buying these drugs? Is that your question?
The question is, how is the medical system getting away with prescribing 100,000 doses of sedatives for one human and nobody stops it?
Okay, so you have a misapprehension there. The question is, what is the medical system there for? Why is it there? It's there to kill people. And so when people die, of course, there's no consequences. When people live, well, you got to show pause. What went wrong here? Like for me, when my patients weren't being hospitalized at a certain frequency, I got a call from the hospital saying, hey, what's going on there? What are you doing? So the system is designed to
murder,
mutilate, torture, and impoverish people. And when that doesn't happen, there's an investigation. And when that doesn't happen, heads will roll.
Okay, well, let's move in another direction because I don't know how to cure that one. I thought you did or had an idea.
No,
chemotherapy.
The cure is non-participation in the system. There's a cure. The cure is very simple.
And you think people like Elvis Presley and Prince and Michael Jackson should just buy their stuff someplace else and not through the system?
Well, I think had they sucked illegal drugs, they probably would have been okay. The death rate from illegal drugs per year in the United States is 10,000 or less. The death rate from legal drugs is 107,000, probably a lot more. So that's only the count of hospitalized deaths due to properly prescribed medications. They don't even count the outpatient ones. It's probably just so if you take a look at the situation, as a person who's decided they want drugs to facilitate their euphoric moods, it's pretty straightforward that using prescription drugs is a pretty deadly proposition. You know, you're better off with legalizing marijuana right now, I understand. They're probably legalizing two other things. Morphine was legal, and so was cocaine at the turn of the century. And, you know, we didn't have all these prescription drug deaths going on.
Well, I'd like to ask what you would do in a situation, and there's been a couple that we've talked about on the show, where the children were taken away from the parents because they said the parents and the parents' doctor had misdiagnosed one little girl who was kept for a year, and a couple of other children were taken away because they refused chemo. What could our audience do in those kinds of cases?
Again, you have to take action long before this happens. You cannot take your child to the medical industrial complex for diagnosis or therapies. That's number one. If you don't get the diagnosis, then, hey, they can't recommend the therapy.
Okay,
go ahead, Sherry.
I was just going to ask where people could go.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I have a radio show. I give people tips every week. I now have a program where I'm teaching people how to handle things at home. Because I used to be an emergency room doctor, right? So I tell people, come into the emergency room. I can tell you exactly what we used to do for these people, and it wasn't very much. And once you understand, okay, I'm going to go to the emergency room, what's going to happen when I get there, and you know what that is, that helps diminish a lot of fear right there. The next step, you say, okay, fine. Obviously, my kid does have a problem. What can I do at home? And then I give people the answer. And to find out about that, you can just go to vitalitycapsules.com, sign up for the free report on the Candida Cleaner, which is how to heal yourself with turpentine. And you know, we'll keep notified of the things that happen and come up. But people need to really take the bull by the horns. My next radio show this Tuesday is going to talk about how prenatal care increases infant mortality and increases maternal mortality. So if you're a woman and you don't get prenatal care, don't do it, and you stay at home and have your baby at home, whatever that looks like, your chances of death decrease tremendously. So maternal death of the mother, during pregnancy and childbirth, has increased sixfold the last 30 years since the advent of prenatal care. And not only that, they don't even count all the mothers who die. It's called maternal death, right? So if the mother dies, and there's not a live baby born, they don't count her death as being due to a pregnancy or pregnancy complications. How about that? It's not counted in the maternal death statistic. So even with the deaths they do count, the death rate has increased sixfold in the past 30 years.
So I have this is a redirect, but it goes to, it's a different, you know, direction in Western medicine. In 100 years ago, yeah, let's say that's a little long, but, you know, 100 years, 75 years, when they were still drilling, you know, they thought that, you know, they would cure a headache issue by drilling a hole in somebody's head, or, you know, we didn't really have what is considered, you know, advanced medicine that we have now, and I'm putting air quotes around that. People lived longer because I'm not talking about the drilling in the head part, but I mean there was less medication, there was less drugging, there was,
right.
you know, and also people had physically active lives. They were growing their own foods, they were taking care of their own land,
right.
so they were physically
and
active
educating
every
their own
day.
Children. Right.
Say that again.
And they were educating their own children.
Right. So it was more the whole. It was a combination of how a child was raised. Like I see people today who grew up with parents that grew food as a choice because they're not that old that they had to do it, but they grew it because they wanted to.
Right.
And I see those adults today growing their own food because they remember how good it was and they like doing it. And so they get the benefit of growing their own food and they get the benefit of eating food that is fresh and vital and not glyphosated to death.
Mm-hmm.
And or they also get the physical activity of doing it. So the lifestyle was more self-contained in that you were physically active because you were growing your own food and you were producing better food because it was, you know, you were picking at its prime vitality and then eating it. So you had that whole benefit. And like you say, also you were educating your own children in a lifestyle that was more of a gestalt of, you know, this is how we live and it works. I mean, for hundreds of years, we lived that way, except for Indians and Christians and, you know, all the invasions and all that. You know, I mean, we lived pretty well. And then the technological advance of the first, you know, medications started to get in, and it seems like, do you have, in your research, have you seen the point at which Western medicine started moving toward drugs as the modality versus anything else? Was there a time when doctors were actually educated to say, go take a walk, you know, get some more exercise, eat a better diet?
No, there's never
eating,
a time,
you know,
when doctors were educated to say that. Doctors were never educated to say that.
Okay.
Doctors may have been permitted to say that in their medical practice without being accused of malpractice, but doctors were always educated to find a patent type substance that they could prescribe with monopoly power to create on the part of the patient a, you know, permanent customer.
See, they really said that's, I think that magic phrase that you just said, that create a permanent customer. It's so, that's such a creepy truth. I can't remember who it was that we interviewed, somebody a couple weeks or last month or sometime recently, talking about how there's an upswing in prescribing infants ADHD drugs.
Exactly.
And it's because they have something called maybe something like fussy baby syndrome. There's probably something very technical, but really that's what it is.
Yes.
And so now there's an upswing of like, oh, let's start them there. So now we're getting infants indoctrinated into, oh, yeah, I started taking Ritalin when I was four.
Not four. 3 months old is what is the lower age they want.
Yikes.
There's a local teaching hospital in Syracuse. They wanted to do drug trials on children for ADHD drugs starting at, I think, 3 months of age or 18 months of age. And there was such an outcry that the whole thing was squashed. It wouldn't even allow the research. Because the question was, how do you get subjects for this? And that's child abuse right there.
Right there.
Giving that kind of drug to an 18-month-old healthy just to do an experiment.
Yeah. Yeah. it's all mind-blowing. I want to move us toward, I know you're here to talk about antidepressants and suicides, and we only have about 10 minutes left, so I want you to at least talk about that. Everything that we've talked about is really leading, I think, to where we are now with medications causing suicides. Can you talk about that?
Yes. So we have a class of medicines called antidepressants. And anti sounds like against, and depression means depression. But really then, you have a drug that you just give to people who are depressed. But these drugs have been shown by research done by the medical industrial complex itself, to worsen sexual dysfunction, contribute to dementia, increase crime, double suicidal thoughts and actions. And why would you take such a drug? The only reason to take such a drug is you're not aware of this track record. But the antidepressants worsen sexual dysfunction in 88% of people who take them. Give me a break. And these people say that it actually worsened their depression as well. And that's one study published by Medscape Family Medicine. Then another study, SSRIs, that's a type of antidepressant, disrupts sleep in the elderly, may contribute to dementia. You know, this is outrageous. So now what they're saying is, well, go ahead and prescribe them anyway, and old folks, just kind of keep track on the dementia and see how the dementia is going. Then we have another study, this is all reported out by Family Medicine Medscape. Another study reported out by Family Medicine Medscape. SSRI is linked to violent crime in young people. That is just outrageous. These are people aged 15 to 24 years. 43% increased risk of violent crime in the 15 to 24-year group. So in other words, you can literally ruin someone's life by putting them on an antidepressant. They commit a violent crime and end up in jail doing 20 years to life. You know, because obviously if you're 15 to 24, but if you're 16 or over, you know, you get the adult sentence. And all this because of their drug. Was it really worth all that to treat their depression? And then in medical school we're told the reason we treat depression is because, well, a person could commit suicide. And then they have studies showing that for teenagers, the incidence of suicidal thoughts increases. So we're not reducing suicide one whit with antidepressants. If anything, we're increasing the suicides. So there's not any reason in terms of patient welfare or clinical outcome to ever prescribe an antidepressant because they increase depression, increase the rate of suicidal attempts, and even successes. So it's you have to ask yourself, well, why are these drugs out there? Why are they being promoted? Because doctors are prescribing them because doctors are told to prescribe them. Okay, so we have to let the doctor off the hook as the source of this. Now, a doctor is still a tool, still an important essential link in the whole, murder sequence. But as far as any individual doctor saying, I think I'll use this drug because we need to increase the suicidality and death rate and dementia rate. Because every new dementia patient is what? Hey, that's a nursing home bed. This is big revenue. So what is really behind this is the doctors are being taught to prescribe this stuff. And the final thing, as I mentioned before, is if they don't prescribe it, then what happens? Florida court rules physician may be liable in suicide. Now, I'll summarize this for you. Basically, a woman was on her antidepressant drugs, which this doctor prescribed. And it's a drug that's known to cause suicidal behavior when it's stopped abruptly. So she stopped it, and a week or two later, she calls the doctor. Hey, doc, I stopped my drug. I feel lousy. What do I do? She prescribes a second drug. And antidepressant drugs are known to have what they call paradoxical effects. So in the first week of prescribing, the person will take the drug, and their chances of committing suicide are highest in that 1 week after the prescription is started. Okay, so he writes a prescription for her. She takes it, and that night kills herself. And so now the courts are saying she could be held responsible for not following the standard of care. In other words, he should have had her come to the office for an evaluation before he prescribed this drug. And then when she killed herself, it would have been okay.
Yikes.
So these doctors are under this kind of legal pressure to prescribe more and more. And obviously, the malpractice happened when he wrote the first prescription for the antidepressant. There was the mistake right there. Why even use a drug that increases your risk of suicide when you stop it? And then why prescribe a drug that increases your risk of suicide when you take it? But the doctors are under this kind of pressure. And so what's the answer? The answer is, presumably, if this person had been in therapy, there would have been somebody monitoring what was going on. So now, if someone's depressed, they all need to be put under direct surveillance by a second professional who checks in with them every day and controls their every action, and then locks them up in a mental institution if their thoughts today or their actions today don't appear to be correct. So what we're saying is the same system that created the problem, we're going to give them even more responsibility or more input over the person's life.
Well, and nowhere along there, because I know this is your lean, definitely, is nowhere in the, any of that process is the idea that anybody would even discuss with them, gee, how's your diet? Do you have any environmental sensitivities? Do you find that, you know, if you go into a room that's just been cleaned with all sorts of chemicals,
no,
that you
that's
get
not,
weird?
No, that is not medicine. And you do not have the right, the government doesn't, nobody has the right, supposedly, to tell medicine what it should and should not be. So this is medicine. Medicine is drugs only. That's what medicine is, drugs only, or another a bunch of professionals, paraprofessionals, monitoring and controlling the patient. That is it. And we were told, really, in medical school, maybe diet might help, maybe supplements might help, but that's not medicine. We're here to teach you medicine. So,
well,
that
medicine,
is,
and
that
medicine,
is,
and medicine
to
seems
that.
To be... Medicine seems to be, or the direction seems to be so much part of the, you know, when you go to see, if you go to see a doctor, the doctor has a certain amount of time that he can have with you as a patient, because they have them booked, like, you know, every 12 minutes, or I don't know what the actual number is, but they're so limited.
You pay cash, you get all the time you want. You're being booked that way because you're paying with your insurance, and these are insurance rules.
Yeah.
We only have.
And if they realize that, they would realize then that their health insurance is a major health, a threat to their health. Just having it.
Dr. Daniels, we only have a few minutes left, and we want to let people know about your radio show and how to get in touch with you. And we have one audience question. So let's pretend that this is your radio show, and that the person has asked you how to get rid of ringing in the ears in a natural way, and they don't want to go to the doctor.
Ringing in the ears is simply, you know, toxicity. And so you've got to basically detox. That's the simple answer. To help you do that, you can go to vitalitycapsules.com, download my free report, and that will be a big help to you.
How do people listen to your show?
You know what? Darn if I know. But it's Tuesday, 6 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. But if you get the free report, you're on the list, and we send you an email every week, and my assistant tells you how to listen.
What's the show called?
Healing with Dr. Daniels.
Okay, and do you take on private patients by phone, Skype, or can they come and visit you?
No, I don't use the word patients because I'm not practicing medicine. This is not the practice of medicine. But I do assist people personally on a one-on-one basis, and I use via telephone, Skype, and not necessarily to come to Panama for that. I do have a Visit Panama program where people can come to Panama, and I teach them how to be natural healers and how to heal the way that I do. I think the important thing here is to really make this healing go viral so people actually are trained, they know what to do, and they can go out and do it.
Would you let us we need to post this. I almost dropped the phone here. About how you have a website that people could get in touch with you with.
The VitalityCapsules.com website is the best way to get in touch with me. So they can go to VitalityCapsules.com and then click Contact Us.
Okay, VitalityCapsules.com. com. Thank you for being on the show. We have more audience questions. I'll shoot those over to you because people are very interested in how they can use your alternative, do you call it alternative? Your natural health method.
And so yes, alternative. Alternative means instead of, complementary means in addition to. So some people do complementary healing, which they use natural methods in addition to prescription methods. But the prescription methods are so deadly that if you don't eliminate them, you really haven't helped the person.
Is that what you would, boy, that's a whole nother show. Would you recommend detox first?
Yeah, detox first, and if you're taking drugs, as you detox, you're not going to need your drugs. So you need to monitor your drugs, have your doctor monitor your drugs, or somehow figure out how you're going to cut them back as you detox.
Okay, well, that gives people an idea.
That's also something I help people with.
Okay, Richard, we are out of time.
That went fast. Thank you very much, and this will be a pitch for once again for people signing up for Blog Talk Radio as a free account. If you go sign up for a free Blog Talk Radio account, you can then search for Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you'll find her shows, and you can follow her there, so you'll get notices from Blog Talk Radio when her shows are happening. And also you can do the same thing for Sherry Edwards. You can search for Sherry Edwards and follow any of the shows that Sherry does as well. So that's another advantage of having the Blog Talk Radio, is you'll get notifications. So that's really great, and easily access all the replays. So that's once again my pitch for signing up for free Blog Talk Radio. That was a lot. Any one of those segments could be a show unto themselves. So thank you very much, Dr. Daniels.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Sherry. Everybody have a great rest of the weekend, and we'll see you on Tuesday. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Later.